Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Universe podcast. I'm your host Leo, here with Ellie.
Hi.
Florentina.
Hello.
And James.
Hello.
Hello everybody. You've all been on this podcast before, so we'll just skip the introduction for now. But since our topic today is poetry, and all of you are poets, I'd like you to try and describe the kind of poetry you write in a couple of sentences. Who wants to start? If you can. I mean, I can give you some time to think about it.
What do you mean?
Shall I start?
Yeah.
I was jokingly like to describe it as very egocentric, because most of it isn't really anybody else's experiences. It's my experiences, my feelings, I guess, and thoughts and ramblings. And the speaker could in most cases be considered to be myself, which is why I on Halloween I went as the speaker of my poems. And also because I don't like dressing up, and if you go as yourself you don't really need to dress up.
I can definitely say that for me it's self-expressive as well, so it's just me writing down my own experiences or the feelings that I get from my own experiences. So it's not necessarily about anything else than that. So self-expression. So mine, I would also say egocentric, and more of the struggles that I go through. So I would say it's more like on a darker scale, just like mental struggles and emotional struggles, like all kinds of, yeah, it's not like, it doesn't sound super positive in my poetry. But I guess it's about, it's a coping mechanism, so I also understand why it can be a little bit like gloomy, but there's always some kind of hope in it too, so yeah.
I would certainly also describe my poetry as a coping mechanism, to pick up on the term, but not necessarily as egocentric, because my poetry mostly deals with a certain topic or image, and I try to describe my emotions or feelings towards that through describing that image or concept. And my poetry is heavily influenced by 19th century poetry and mostly sticks to meter and rhyme.
Yeah, I guess in some ways my poetry sort of compared to you guys be somewhat close to Florentina's in the I think it's probably true of most people who write poetry that there's a degree of kind of coping mechanism and expression there. But I certainly, the reason it kind of works as a mechanism like that for me is that it kind of is about fitting those feelings into kind of metrical structures, or expressing them via kind of reflecting them in other things that exist or happen in the world. I guess the sort of, I mean, my poetry is like really quite all over the place in terms of style. Sometimes there's a much more kind of modern blank versey feel, but I think there's also a lot of influence from, there's some bits of 19th century, but there's certainly also some bits of kind of English kind of folk poetry and folk music lyrics and that kind of ballad style, which I kind of play around with and pull around with quite a lot as a way of just, yeah, almost even sometimes creating stories via poems that can then impose some sort of order on whatever is going on in my head.
And there are often stories in poems. Isn't that something timeless? And not necessarily connected to a particular style?
I think so, but I think it's quite dependent, like, how much of a story there is and how developed the story is, I think, is quite stylistically dependent. In that, even with a sort of very, pure emotion expressive poem, there's a story, like, implied in that, there's a story behind that, but you don't get the sort of full, you don't get a kind of narrative of characters and events in it. You get a sort of snapshot of a point in it. Whereas I think a ballad style lends itself more to something that could be kind of then like spun out, because you do usually flesh out what's going on more than what people are thinking.
Okay, yeah, I get that point. Okay, but by story I meant some kind of plot, not necessarily characters with names or anything like that. Just
yeah.
storyline.
I feel like there's somewhat of a divide here on the table with you and me sitting on this side of the table and you two guys sitting on the other side of the table with the people who almost never use any kind of formal media or anything and you guys on the other side.
So we were just staring at you nodding. Okay.
Okay. So, do you think formal style is, I mean, it obviously is important to you guys if you use it. For me, I think it's very difficult because even though I've learned, you know, what the kind of meters are, stuff like that, and I always tend to forget them, so I look it up again. But even if I looked it up right now, I'd have a really hard time. I've tried before. I have a really hard time coming up with something that fits into that because kind of I find it a bit inhibiting to keeping to those structures. It works well for a couple of lines, but then I kind of want to break out and I want to leave it. Just
there's one solution for not finding the right word to fit in a gap: make up one.
It's true. Yeah,
I do have to admit that that's not the ideal solution to the problem, but it definitely is one, and you can do it once in a while.
Mm. I think it's really funny when you literally, that's just my kind of humor, when you literally translate words from one language into the other. You take like German compound words and put them into English. I just think that's hilarious.
I've always loved the fact that the what in English we call the edible dormouse, and in German it's the Siebenschleifer. In English, that's the seventh sleeper.
Yeah,
it's just a wonderful term.
But still, I mean, what's it in English? Edible dormouse.
The edible dormouse.
So you can, like, as in, you can eat it.
Yeah,
edible.
The we have, like, the Romans ate them. We have Roman era recipes.
So, I mean, the Romans also ate like the tongues of like flamingos.
Oh,
they were fancy like that.
Yeah. Anyway.
What I would say is, for me, it's not liberating enough, or it's, well, I feel like it's captivating me. Like, it's not, it's like preventing me from expressing myself freely, because I feel like if I pay attention to the structure and the style, I'm just gonna shift away from my content. And for me, content matters more than form. So, and some of my poetry, like some of my lines, they actually rhyme, but that is completely coincidental. And I love it when it does, but I can never ever plan it. It's very strange, but I feel like it's just also the poetry. Like when I read it, it feels more free, but that doesn't mean I don't like the ones with the like strict form and structure. When it works perfectly, but I'm like personally not like able to do that. But also, like, again, like, it's my personality, like, the way I express myself, I feel more free doing, like, not paying attention to the form and structure.
Weirdly enough, I don't feel restricted at all, even though I mostly stick to meter and rhythm, meter and rhyme. But the play of finding synonyms and words that sound better, go together or rhyme, within that amount of word or space that you're given, to me, that's another layer of work, and most of the time improves my work, I feel.
I actually do that too, to be honest. Like, I think of one word in the beginning, and then I'm like, what are the alternatives? And I always have, like, thesaurus open, like, looking up, like, new words. But again, like, not necessarily for rhyming, but maybe, okay, like, I want this meaning, but there could be a stronger word that'll convey that meaning.
So you write your poems on several sittings. That's what I always wonder. I mean, it must take you so much longer to come up with a finished poem that fits into everything.
No, not necessarily. My poems do take some time to write, but that's just because I'm a perfectionist. I really edit my poems several times before reading them at the
end. Oh, that's ideal, isn't it? I mean, it shows how much you care.
Yeah, that's fair.
I actually almost never take more than one sitting to write a poem, and I almost never edit poems. I mean, often a poem will have taken a while to form, but it will be in the sense of there's usually usually I find there's like a hook for a poem. There's, you know, a line or a concept or an image. And that will often, you know, be sitting in my head for maybe a day or two. But then I sit down and I produce the poem. And often if I don't produce it in one sitting, it doesn't get finished.
Yeah, same.
Have you never been stuck in the middle of a poem where you just don't know how you want to continue it? Because that happens to me quite a lot.
I usually find that I just kind of push through that and get something down if I think it's worth getting something down for.
And you don't edit it afterwards if you come up with something better?
Very rarely. It's something I sort of maybe once or twice a year I'll find a poem that I actually do want to tweak, but usually it's... I think it's also helped by the fact that often I find that the kind of hook lines and so on I have for poems are often the, like, end point of the poem.
Yeah.
So it's either the start or the end, but it's often more usually that I kind of have an idea of how I'm going to round it off or what the kind of final point is. So that helps me not end up getting stuck in the middle, because I just sort of need to push through the middle to the point I'm going to be at the end.
Okay, yeah, for me it's always the other way around. I always know the beginning but not the end.
For me too, yeah. Or, like, as you said, a theme, like, recently. The idea of having your hair on fire. Got a more exciting question now. So, there's loads of issues and topics in poetry that are kind of... You know, they've been done before, and they've been done before quite often. So my question would be, if you could choose one topic and ban it, so no poet could ever, like, write a poem about it again, what would it be?
I don't feel that strongly about any topic, honestly.
I mean, before picking a topic, I'm, like, obliged to say that my strongest opinion on this is that you should never ban anybody from, like... writing on topics.
It's a theoretical question.
However, like, if I was, you know, forced at gunpoint to ban a poetry topic...
As it happens to you, in the street daily.
I mean, you know my life. Yeah. I'd probably go for, like, that sort of particular stage everybody has of the angsty teenage poem. I mean, if only because it is a genre into which, like, I can see where my past self was going with it, and I would rather not anybody have to, like...
Can you, like, define that? How does that look like?
Isn't it so common and you see it all over the internet?
I've seen loads of them on Tumblr.
Yeah.
On Poetry Tumblr, it's creepy.
Oh, pretty, like, there's, like, quotes and, like, on, like, pictures, they, like... have this, like, a couple lines on, like, this cheesy picture, like, a couple...
Yeah, something lines. Like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And also the, like, kind of, really on the nose, but, like, underdeveloped, kind of, angsty, not quite romance poetry you get from, like, the 15-year-old to 16-year-old mind. I don't know. Just looking back on my output from that era.
This gives me an idea. We should do an episode of the podcast with all the poets, or maybe another one with all the prose writers, where they all bring, you know, it's like a fail share where you all bring your worst poems and the prose writers bring their worst short stories.
So that would be fun, yes.
Yeah. That's an amazing Absolutely. Thing. Okay, back to the question. Don't hate me, but I would ban love poems. There are so many out there, only very few of them are original by now, and I just feel that if you write new ones, you don't really add anything to that particular kind of poetry story.
We've done love at this point.
Yeah.
Sorry. I guess the question with that, though, is where, like, what is the boundary of love poetry?
Mm-hmm. Is this, like, romance? Is it, like, family love? Like,
just love romance. Romance, really.
I think the problem with that is that in those areas, especially, like, love and The biggest thing, I think there's a lot of metaphors that are really overused.
Mm-hmm.
But just, yeah. You know, they've been done and done before.
I think it's a matter of how you do it, right? Like, not the topic itself, but, like, if you go over the top with your metaphors and the clichés.
Yeah, no, it's just like, you know, you get another one, it's awesome. My love is like a red, red rose. It's like, oh, yours too! Coincidence.
Wow. That's also just about to write mention about the
Yeah. But I think something that I never get tired of is seeing different kinds of experiences of love in poetry. Because I think that's, I mean, especially, you know, with societies being more restrictive in the past, there's a lot of material that only now can go out, and lots of writers that only now can properly express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that, but for instance, Baudelaire was pretty progressive for his time. And have you taken a look at, say, Beau Taplin's or Rupi Kaur's love poems?
Because, yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't like them?
No.
Yeah. I think Rupi Kaur was very, very popular. But I haven't really read enough of her to make a judgment, really.
I tried to get into Milk and Honey or All the Sun and Her Flowers several times, but I always got stuck after a few pages because her poetry doesn't speak to me at all.
Mm.
I think it's very heavy on cliches and overused metaphors and simplicity.
Mm. It certainly is. It makes a point of being as simple as possible, which isn't a bad thing. I do enjoy that.
Yeah, but there's some of the really short poems that are really just plain thoughts written out that they look artistic.
I've also got in mind a big debate episode on contemporary poetry where we have like two sides and everybody brings examples.
I actually love that.
Okay.
Because I discovered Alex L during the summer. I think Olivia mentioned her to me before, but I never got the chance to like look her up or get her books. And it was also very coincidental because there was something like a fair, and I saw this book called Neon Soul, and it just looked, it was like screaming for me to like go grab it, and I just took a look just in some of the random like pages, and it was just like maybe two lines, but it just said so much. Like, even just, I think she had like poems pages like where she only had 3 words, but it connected so well with one another, and it just speaks to you so strongly that I bought it. It's like my Bible. I can't go around without it. And like, I reread it so many times, and every time I can find more meanings inside. And I don't understand, like, how can a person design that? Like, how can you say so little sometimes but just talk too much? Like, there's so much more meaning behind it. And because of that, I really like that like maybe she didn't stick with like from before, like the poetry from before where you have like longer more lines and more sophisticated words or just like form and structure and everything, and she just wrote down her thoughts. And it looked artistic, you know, as you said. It just looked so... There, even, like, how she changed into the next line. Like, it was just so intentional. So, for me, that was, like... I think that's, like, my best example of a contemporary, like, poem.
Yeah, I mean, I feel almost... to, like, throw a bit of a random curveball into this... One of the things is that we kind of lump a lot of, I mean, we basically lump any form of doing like artistic stuff with words that isn't straight up prose writing.
Mm.
We dump it all into a category and call it poetry. And they're really, I mean, the sort of Like comparing some a sort of like folky style ballad writing piece with the sort of like art writing you're talking about, they're just such, you know, it's they're just such completely different art forms.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do kind of all dump them into the same category, and I think maybe give them a kind of equivalence that doesn't always work.
That is true. Yeah.
To get back to Ellie, I do get your point, and there's an amazing poem of Bo Taplin's that's called Broken Waves. I don't know by heart, but it's my favorite poem of his. And it is quite amazing, even though it's only either 2 or 4 lines. And I have to add, concerning contemporary poetry, that there is Mary Oliver. Marie recommended one of her books to me a while ago, and she's the only contemporary poet I've found so far that I really like. And her poems are also quite simplistic in style and language. Nevertheless, there's so much meaning and depth to them. But yeah, she's really the only exception.
I think that's my favorite kind of poetry.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, it's very coincidental that I find a book. As I said, I was on a ferry, and like, it just looks so much, so interesting. Just even the name, Neon Soul, it felt like it was calling me, so. And I got it.
It is a good name.
I wasn't necessarily looking for it.
That would be exactly the kind of book I wouldn't pick up.
Different kind of poets.
Yeah, 100 different kinds of types of tables. So let's go to the next big issue. We talked about that last time, about poetry slams, and neither you nor I have ever been to a poetry slam, or have you been to one in the meantime?
No.
Okay.
I
really
like to.
I heard about them in New York, and I was like, oh, they have it in Vienna too. I should go to one when I'm back. And I actually mentioned it in the group, I think, in the community group.
Mm-hmm.
And some of you guys were like, yeah, it's a bit of a competitiveness in it.
Yeah, so we talked about that last time with Charlotte. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've never been in one. Maybe it's more like giving feedback rather than competing. Like, it's just,
no,
I mean, it's
really
the traditional sense.
Well, Charlotte explained it last time, and it seems to be really competitive.
Mm.
Okay, because a friend of mine was at one of those, or like she was doing them for a while, and she was like, it's like the traditional sense, yes, like the poetry slam, like in its meaning, is competition, but actually it's not as, like, it's not a negative competition, it's more like people giving out feedback to each other or something. But again, I was never in one, but I really want to check it out, because I think it's something progressive. I want to be a part of it, like, just to hear from other authors and just,
I just really like the kind of public aspect of it, because writing poetry can be such a solitary experience. And I think it's kind of it's a nice counterpart to that, taking what you've done outside of that. And also there's the performance aspect to that. I think that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's sort of, I was just saying, the different bits of poetry being sort of different art forms in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Performance poetry really transforms it into yet another different sort of art form, because it's, I've never done a poetry slam, but I have done kind of spoken word storytelling with more prose type stuff, and that is such a different form to writing, and you need to write different things for it, because just what works on paper and what works when spoken can be really quite different things. And what works when spoken has to, like, click in much more closely with you and what you can say and what you can perform. Whereas I think written poetry you don't have the immediacy that you get with performance, but you can maybe, there's also some advantages in some ways in not performing things, in that you can then almost like universalize them slightly more, because you're not writing them for that, you don't have to channel it for a particular person if you're just writing it for paper, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. But we have all read our poems to groups of people, at least at the universe, which is, at the beginning it was very thrilling, at least it was for me.
I remember wanting someone else to read my poem instead of me, because I was like really shy.
I was also very nervous.
Yeah.
It's still daunting to me.
Yeah, and now it's like, it's become very casual for me,
I'm getting better at it too.
I'm much more daunted about reading poetry out than reading prose out at the group sessions. I don't quite know why, but
Are poems more personal to you?
I don't think so particularly, actually. I mean, my prose is often very, is at least about as personal as my poetry. I think it's as much that I feel like poetry is something that I don't know about in a way that I don't feel with prose. Like, I suppose because I don't have a terribly good knowledge of, like, other poets through 19th and 20th and 21st centuries. I've not been around the sort of poetry slam scene at all. So I feel sort of disconnected a bit with how the rest of the world does poetry. And the influences on my poetry are often, you know, quite eclectic, and they come from areas that are sort of outside the, like, modern Western poetry world, in that they come from, you know, music and lyrical styles, or they come from kind of medieval end things, which I actually work on as a historian. And so, yeah, I feel like I'm sort of drawing things in and piling them up in a way that rhymes, so it's technically a poem. But yeah, I do still have that sort of nervousness, maybe just as primarily a prose writer when I kind of venture into the poetry world.
I wonder though whether, I mean, that's true for prose just as much as it is for poetry, whether you can actually ever be competent, if you know what I mean. Like, I mean, how and when can you consider yourself an expert with the right to speak on this?
Yeah, I don't really have this word. I agree, I don't think you can, but I still have that feeling, even if I know it's not, like, rational in the circumstance.
You could get a PhD in English literature, but nevertheless...
That doesn't make you a good poet.
I mean, you probably know all the formal characteristics, etc., of the different periods, but nevertheless...
That says that you have to stick with them, or... But universe could be something good for you to, like, experiment in.
Sure.
You know.
It's certainly kind of a safe space for that. I mean, even though it is daunting in the beginning to read there... It does get easier after a while with time, and I think it's very fruitful, the whole thing.
That's a good way to describe it, reading the universe.
Yeah, I do get the feeling sometimes that some of my poems are... I know that nobody's gonna, like, judge me or something, but some things are, like, very personal, and I still struggle to, like, open up that side of me to a bunch of people, even though I've been there for years and people know me, and, you know, but there's still, I think, some things, some forms of your art that just stays with you and is meant for you and not for a, like, bigger audience. Like, I would still publish them in a way, but, like, going there and reading that, still, like, perform that, is still, like, something that makes me nervous.
Yeah, because if you publish them, it's either somewhere on a screen or somewhere on a sheet of paper. It's not you telling the story. It's kind of divorced from you as a person.
Exactly.
And you kind of, at the universe, you do kind of open yourself up for questions later, afterwards, when people ask what you mean with this, and then you might have to, if it's very personal. I mean, you can always refuse. I don't think you're forced to tell your tragic backstory of the universe.
I feel like this actually may be, again, a kind of sides of the table poetry difference, because the kind of opening myself up thing, I don't seem to have that problem with my poetry in the universe, because with me, by the time the thought or the emotion has got to being in the form of a poem, it's all very, like, you know, wrapped up and sculpted into something, which I guess makes it less raw and kind of puts it into something that feels a bit more distant from me, which I think is partly why I write the poems like that, because I, like, often if I'm trying to express something, I'm not necessarily trying to kind of just vent it straight onto paper. I'm trying to build something that makes sense of it, structures it, like, puts it in the context of, like, other, like, I'm pulling in other references that, like, click into what I'm thinking and make sense of that, and that's what forms the poem.
I do get that, but at the same time, some of my poems that are really emotional, just for me personally, mostly because of the circumstances and I wrote them in, and because of background, it sometimes is the case that they come back to haunt me later on. There are a few lines that are just constantly going around my head, and I wish I could get them out, but I couldn't. But I can't because they're catchy in a way.
Even after you've written them down and turned them into a poem, they still stay around.
Yeah, because I usually play with words and phrases, and if the thought is on the paper, not in its rawest form anymore, and kind of processed into beautiful sounding words, these few lines are so much more catchy than the initial thought to me.
So it actually enhances your feelings rather than, like, getting them out of you. It, like, makes them stronger in you, in a way?
Yes, in a way. I'm still happy about writing those things down and getting rid of it first, but yeah, they come around to haunting me. Which is really weird.
Yeah, I do get that, though. Yeah, I mean, this brings us to the next question, which is, what is the last poem you wrote? And does it still stay with you? Are the lines still going around in your head?
Last poem I finished or started?
It only says wrote, so it can here on my computer screen, so it could be both.
Okay, because I'm writing two poems simultaneously. And the interesting thing is that they're both continuations of other poems, but what's supposed to be a third part is less clear to me than a fourth part, and I'm working on a fourth part more than I'm working on a third part, and I'm especially starting with the title of the third part because I don't know whether I should break out of the scheme, and yeah, I've been thinking about titles quite a lot over the past few days.
Titles are very difficult to me, as you might know, because my poem usually gets a number, yeah. I don't know, sometimes I find something that's just catchy, but it's like I say that's like 5% of the poems I write.
I think mine are usually like I start with one word or one line, and then that is usually the title of it, because that's like, I start very strong and then I narrow it down kind of, so that's like the theme.
Ideally, I would like the title to give an extra meaning to the poem, and that's quite hard to manage.
But about lingering, like you said, your words linger in your head afterwards, and that's how we shifted to this question. And I was thinking, because the last poem I wrote is called Remnants, and so it's about when you meet a person. It's not necessarily like in a romantic sense, but like afterwards you try to like get them out of your head, or like maybe, I don't know, you don't see them anymore, but there are things that are so associated with them that you just want to get out of your head, and it's like the remnants of them. And I was writing this horror story for Halloween event for the universe, and I remember using remnants for just to describe the remnants of an abandoned amusement park. And Marie afterwards, she was like, I love that you use this word, like, it's just, it gives it so much more depth. And then I thought about it. It's actually something from that poem that like lingered in my head that I could make again into that story. So yeah, I guess it happens to me too.
That happens to me quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have idea hooks that can kind of bounce between my different sorts of writing like that. Yeah, I mean, the last poem I wrote was called Dark Light, and I can probably still remember and quote bits of it. I mean, the sort of first and last line of the poem was, "There is a dark light on hills today," and that was very much the hook that started that poem, so I've still got that with me. A lot of the middle bit, I could roughly tell you what it said, but I wouldn't necessarily have all of the, like, words in there. Often in terms of the sort of more kind of detailed bits of the writing of a poem, that's often something that I focus very strongly on when I'm actually writing the poem, but then I don't necessarily keep those with me so much.
For me, like, I have the idea, the lines in my head still often the way they were at first, but then I do some, like, very specific editing, and that's only really for the page, that kind of editing. It's not really for the whole, you know, the feeling of the poem is in that kind of hook that you think at first, from where the poem then grows. I've got another fun question, which is, I was wondering whether there is a poem that you've been meaning to write for a long time but haven't so far. Quite the way that, you know, certain hooks or lines stay around in your head, but you've never written them down yet.
Tons.
Tons. Tons. We're all nodding right now.
I don't have many, actually. I mean, I might have one or two. I thought about it hard, but for me, it's much more the prose writing that hits the back burner, and the poetry. It's usually there's the hook, the poem's written, it's out of the way. I don't usually, if I have a hook and it doesn't turn into a poem within about a week, it's probably gone and the poem's not coming anyway.
Mm.
So I don't.
Down and save it for later. Really, it's tragic to lose ideas. They could turn into something really beautiful.
But like, if I start writing something down and then not continue, it never goes anywhere. This was part of the question. I've got the first three stanzas of a story poem in my archive that's about like a medieval French lord who was very, it's actually like a medieval story, and he was, you know, very petty and always complained to his liege lord, and because I read that, you know, the documents from that time about him, and then I found it was really like a funny story, you know, like darkly funny. But yeah, I never continued, and I really like, I think there's great potential in it, but it's been so long.
But you might, because I do find sometimes like drafts or half poems or stories, and then I like, when there's the right time, I actually think that, you know, oh my god, this is great, I could continue this, and then it actually turns out good. And I do that, as you said, because sometimes I have, like, ideas, but not necessarily. I mean, usually they come to me, I pour them out, and then it's done. But sometimes I have a theme in my mind. I know that I want to write about this, and I start a couple of lines, and then I'm like, okay, I'm not in the moment yet. I think there has to be something that brings me to that, and it usually does, because it's like an open page in my mind, and then at one point I complete it. But actually there's something that's so funny, because I have to get them out right away, but with this I was like thinking for half a year now that I want to write a poem about dogs. I just love dogs. And I feel so strongly for that. It's a very strong love. It's a love poem. But I never really got the chance, because I'm like, okay, I'm not in the moment yet. Like, it has to be something.
The moment of peace, dog love.
This love, yeah, exactly. This has to explode in me.
The canine maximum point.
Exactly. The climax of that, like, dog love. A couple of days ago, I started. It's like, I think, 4 lines, but still needs some kind of, like, some more. Like, it's not complete, because four lines is also fine, as we talked about, like, or even 2 words, but it's, I still feel like it can be stronger, because I feel much stronger about them.
I think that both things, sometimes I really do need to get something out of my system, but on the other hand, I've got a box full of ideas for poems at home, and, yeah, but now it's pretty full. But even when I finish a poem, I usually just give the slip of paper back into the box, because I never know, it may turn to something else at a different point in time, and I really like to do that and keep it neat and tidy that way.
I don't know who it was, but I once saw, like, the manuscript pages of a quite famous poet, and he wrote his poetry in, like, hundreds of tiny slips of paper, which he always kept rearranging and then numbering and doing lines. And it must have been, like, a terror to edit them, or for his editor to go through that. Like, it's, like, hundreds of pieces of paper, like, all strewn across the floor.
Thank God we have computers.
And Dickinson also notoriously wrote her poems on envelopes. So there are even books filled with those envelope poems out there. And okay. I've got one at home, it's amazing.
Is the book also, like, are the pages made out of envelopes?
No, sadly no.
That would be great though. I mean, a bit
but
wasteful,
it's
maybe.
It's too thick and heavy, so that would really be possible.
Yeah. Is there a poem you regret writing? Or regret not writing, maybe, also?
Dog poem.
The dog poem, yeah.
Well, I can't yet say that I regret not writing some of my poems, because I might get around to writing them eventually. And no, so far there's not a single one that I really regret. I have to admit that I once tore a poem apart, just because I felt that A, it wasn't good. B, it wasn't really necessary. Those are weird reasons, but
no, that's good reasons. That's perfectly fine reasons.
Okay, thanks.
I think it's about how much it resonates with you too. Like, sometimes you write something that doesn't speak to you.
I want to forget about that particular moment that I wrote down the poem. That's why it was.
Yeah, I also agree, there are definitely better and worse ones, but I would like to keep them all just because they're a part of me, in a sense.
There certainly are a few quite horrible ones for me.
I get that, but by the way, this is weird, but I've got a poem back at home that starts with, "Of all the things I did not write, I do regret but one."
Yeah, I don't think I really can regret either writing or not writing poems, in that I sort of, the concept of regret just doesn't fit with how I see that. Like, there's, even for the, you know, aforementioned terrible poetry I wrote in my mid-teenage years, like, I still have a lot of that, and I feel like it would be wrong for 24-year-old me to be too judgmental of 15-year-old me. So yeah, I think there's definitely a sense in which poetry is all part of you, and it's kind of worth keeping the past to see what the past was like. But yeah, so yeah, as I say, I don't really think I can regret in that sense.
Speaking of regret, have you ever written a poem for or about somebody and shown it to them, and how did it go?
Yeah, I wrote one for Olivia, because she was my, what was that game? Secret Santa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I wanted to write her a poem about her, and I gave it to her in a little, like, bottle type of thing. I, like, rolled it into a small, like, what do you call it? Piece.
Scroll,
exactly, and put it in a tiny bottle, and she was very happy. She loved it. Yeah.
I think that's...
That was very good.
Definitely a present Livia would appreciate.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
I wrote an epic poem and also illustrated it for my parents' wedding.
Oh, that's nice.
That's cute.
Yeah.
In German? No.
No, in English. Good. It was only earlier this year.
Would have been surprising for me for you to write in German.
No, I don't write in German. No, it was earlier this year, so it was in English.
Mm.
And there are a few other poems I wrote about people, but I haven't shown them to the people. This one I probably should finish and show Carrie. So Carrie, if you're listening to this, please remind me that I need to finish this poem.
Oh, she will. She will.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually several times written poems about people I know and German people, and it's always been fine. I mean, I mean, the sort of more interesting story on this, there was the, during the aforementioned, repeatedly at this point, angsty teenage poetry phase, I used to, and actually still do, I tend to, post my poems online, and some of them are, very explicitly about someone, and if it's that explicitly about someone, I would usually, say it and, show it to that person. But, yeah, the romantic poetry, I wouldn't tend to do that. There was definitely a point in high school where I wrote a poem that was about someone, not explicitly, but implicitly in how I wrote it, mentioned it to someone who wasn't that person, and the person it was written about found out. So that was very awkward. That was very awkward indeed. But so yeah, so unless it's a romantic poem and I have hardly written any romantic poems since I got out of my teenage years. then I do quite like writing poems about people I know and as a way of, expressing who they are and what that means to me. And I think it actually be a very nice thing to do.
Mm. Do you give them as presents as Ellie did?
I don't think I've ever given anyone a poem as a present. Maybe I should do.
I've been thinking about what I want to do for my next birthday. If you're coming to my party, you either need to write a poem and bring it along and read it to everybody, or you need to buy a small book of poetry. So you can get yourself out of spending money by writing a poem, however bad it may be. Just any poem is fine.
I should find you that book I told you about. I don't know if they sell it in Austria, but I mean,
probably get it on Amazon.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's see.
All right. Now that I've spilled the beans on my birthday wishes, which is,
will you be inviting the podcast listeners?
I think this is like an issue, like the Facebook parties that were famous a couple of years ago. I don't think it's such a good idea. Expect personal invitations. All right, bit self-indulgent, but I think that's how we started. That we started with with egocentric poetry, and then we ended on me talking about what I want for my birthday. So, where can the people find you or your work on the internet if they want to find your poems, love poems and otherwise?
I actually stopped publishing my poems, but I do have a blog where I wrote about my travels, and some of my poems are in there, and it's already linked in the description.
Go and put it in the show notes again.
Yes. And I do have an Instagram page, which is also not very active, but I like to discover secret cafes, coffee houses generally around the world. So if you'd like to check that one out, go ahead. I think we will write it down as well.
I will.
In order to hear my poetry, you have to come to Universal.
Hashtag not spawn.
Nice plug. Yeah, I mean, I do have Twitter and Mastodon accounts, both of which are at Jubal Barker, but I can give you a link for the show notes. My poetry on the exilion.co.uk forums, there is basically an archive of most of my poetry going back right through to angsty teenage years, which you can, if you want to, / if you dare, you know, venture into. Again, I can send you a link for the show notes. Yeah, there's a poetry and artistic writing section on the forums, which has that.
Awesome.
Oh, and the anthology, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, all I've got in the anthology is prose, so...
Yeah. The anthology is always in the show notes.
Perfect.
Yeah, so you can always find me on Twitter, as usual. And for my poetry, you also need to come to the universe, like it or not. This was episode 23 of the Universe Podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe Podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review to tell other people what you think about it and help them find the podcast. And tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter, we're at PodUniverse, on Facebook, or on our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeier. The guests for this episode were Elif Nanz-Kavalje, Florentina Jungwirth, and James Bailey. I hope you visit this planet in the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thanks for listening.